Steve. When I was coming here this afternoon, it feels like this morning I started out, all the various roads were closed down. And it ended up that I was almost giving up hope of getting here. And there was a car that was parked with another person, two cars together. And I went over and asked them, did anyone there possibly know first where Kearney was and then where Belgrove was, a 499 or something like that, you see? And and they said, we're going there. So it ended up, they took me all the way to back roads and everything else, and after a while I began to make an act of faith. Did they understand what I said to them? And then suddenly we were here. Okay, a little late, but we're here. So I'm very, very grateful to those people. But that's God's providence too, you understand. Okay. Those, in other words, the obstacles is part of it. And then on the other hand, the people out of nowhere going exactly where you're going and bringing you there. Okay, that, you need that. Okay, in life itself, you need someone to guide you. I don't know if you are acquainted with this this couple that was in Seattle that was taking a vacation. Okay. I just read this little thing because you've had a long day. And it says, after being nearly snowbound for 2 weeks last winter, a Seattle man departed for his vacation in Miami Beach, where he was to meet his wife the next day at the conclusion of her business trip to Minneapolis. And they were looking forward to the pleasant weather and a nice time together. Unfortunately, there was some sort of mix-up at the boarding gate, and the man was told that he'd have to wait for a later flight. He tried to appeal to a supervisor, but was told the airline was not responsible for the problem, and it would do no good to complain. Upon arrival at the hotel the next day, he discovered that Miami Beach was having a heat wave, and its weather was almost as uncomfortably hot as Seattle's was cold. The desk clerk gave him a message that his wife would arrive as planned. He could hardly wait to get into the pool area to cool off, and he quickly sent his wife an email, but due to his haste, he made an error in the address. His message therefore arrived at the home of an elderly preacher's wife, whose even older husband had died only the day before. When the grieving widow opened up her email, she took one look at the monitor, let out an anguished scream, and fell to the floor dead. Her family rushed to her room, where they saw this message on the screen. Dearest wife, departed yesterday, as you know. Just now got checked in. Some confusion at the gate. Appeal was denied. Received confirmation of your arrival tomorrow. Your loving husband. P.S. Things are not as we thought. You're going to be surprised at how hot it is down here. This is the modern means of communication, which can cause chaos rapidly. What I thought I would try to do this afternoon, a little bit of time, less a span of time here, but what I thought I'd try to do in this brief time would be to speak about how today people have a view of life that is a partial view of life. How they don't put the dots together. They don't see the whole picture. And as a result of that, you can enter into and accept how people deal with things without making the connections also, and you do so at your own risk. The other part that I want to stress is that you are stressing here that this week, and I understand the call, and then following the call of Christ, you have a formation or transformation that has to take place before you can go out and change the world. Otherwise, you bring the world nothing. to be sent by God is very important, but you must be a God-like people. Otherwise, we just spread more errors and darkness. But if you're the people who are the light of the world and the salt of the earth, then the formation part is important. Just stressing that part first, I'd like to stress to you that the gift of life is a gift. We tend to think you have a right to life, you know. We use that expression, do we not? A right to life. You really don't have a right to life. You have a gift that came from God, and when you receive that gift, as a result of that life that you possess, you now have a right that no one interfere with your life. Okay? But in the sense of using that term, right to life, as though we have a right to life, that is not a gift. We fail to appreciate fully this great gift of life that God has given to us. The second gift that is incredibly important that God gives to us with life is the gift of time. And again, it's a gift that we sort of take for granted, but how much time you have and I have, I do not know. I do know this, it's limited. And the time that we have, it's incredibly important that we use it well, and requires wisdom to do so. So the using of time, what is the purpose of time? Why does God give us time? Well, the reality is that in the human condition and being a human being, we are in the process of change, and change, it automatically indicates that there is time. But the change can either be for the good or the worse, or could there be no change? One of the great tragedies I see in today's world is, you know, we speak about people wasting a good mind. It's a shame. Well, I see people wasting a good life and time that God gave to them. And the days just going by, and they're living at such a superficial level. They're living at a level that the world has them at, where it's almost without meaning, and they don't understand that. For yourself, it's important that you understand that life itself comes, your life comes from God, and it's returning to God. And because you have this life, this gift from God, that is the basis of justice, you see. Justice does not create rights. The word justice, jus, meaning right, it recognizes rights. But the right that is there is the result of God making you. Okay? And because you exist, you have now I have to respect that existence. I have to respect your right to life. Right? And the other side of the coin, of course, is that you who have received this gift of life, it is precious. And it is to be used for the glory of God. It's to be used well. Many people, I say, today, what do we do? We disconnect all the time. Disconnect. You see, life itself, in the year 2000, we were told it was an incredible accomplishment, and it was. We were told that when you had the fusion of the sperm and the ovum, and you had the zygote, that this first cell contained information about your whole life. And this DNA code that was there had these incredible amounts of genes that they were going to try to break it down and to discover the genes that were there. And after many years, with great use of computers and so forth, we were told to applaud, and rightfully so, this incredible accomplishment of the modern man, of finally understanding what is the origins of life, what causes life, what brings life about. And we find out that beneath the chromosomes, each one has 46 chromosomes, beneath these chromosomes are these genes, the 60, they said 100,000, we know it's at least 60,000 genes, that have all the message of your life that is there. Now, I find it, you know, interesting that, see, a man and a woman in your body, every cell that you possess has 46 chromosomes, save one. In the man, the sperm has 23 chromosomes. In the woman, the ovum has 23 chromosomes. And they are meant to come together, and when they fuse, you now have a new cell with 23 and 23, 46 chromosomes, which are totally different from the chromosome makeup of mom or dad. That the whole genetic makeup of this new life is absolutely unique, and it is the result of the fusion of the sperm and the ovum, and you have the zygote. And then you have this incredible new cell with this information in it that is beyond understanding. It's incredible. I find it interesting from the point of view of 1859, Darwin had his book, The Origins of Species, and it was his theory. But today, modern molecular biology is making it more to be a myth than a theory. Because it went from a theory to practically a law to practically it is absolutely the reality. Now, what do I mean by that? In Darwin's Origins of Species, he has this theory that everything is a type of change. And that is a constant type of constant variable changes, order comes. Right? And the lesser produces the higher. So you start to say that when the lesser produces the higher, then you end up with our cells being a high form of animal life, because the lesser produces the higher. It's not true. Okay? But first of all, the chaos does not bring order. You don't get a higher life from a lesser life. And this is now modern molecular biology indicating this as a scientific fact, that it's the exact opposite that takes place. Namely, that from the beginning, in this original cell, where all your genetic information is there, called the genome, that all of this information that is there, these genes will influence the proteins and start to produce the various parts of your body, and it will bring order where there is chaos. The law enforces in your body, in the world, are the genes. And not only will it bring order to you, but it will maintain that order throughout the whole of your life. And if there is a deficiency in the genes, then you're going to have a problem later on. But the reality, it starts with the order. It starts with this intelligent genome determining your whole life. So what they have found out is that from the very beginning, this single cell has at least 60,000 genes. It has 880,000 pages of information that is right there from day one. The whole genome, the whole genetic information of your life, of everything that's going to happen to you from the beginning, and it works itself out and creates the order and maintains the order. See, that's the opposite. That's not a constant mutation changing into order, namely chaos resulting in order. No, it's order bringing order into chaos. Where there's chaos, it brings order. And it maintains it throughout the whole of your life. Right? This is incredibly important, because this is where theology and science meet. There are many people today who talk about evolutionary creationism. Evolutionary creationism. They don't talk about a big bang, and out of nothing, you know, out of this matter, energy, comes this incredible world. That's nonsense. You see, in other words, we know that matter, you can't get rid of matter. Matter turns into energy, energy turns into matter, back and forth, the laws of thermodynamics. First basic law, Einstein's theory of relativity, E equals mc squared. Yeah? We know that. But it doesn't mean that that matter explains its own existence. That's a jump. And what we find out now is that the matter that you start with, everything, each species has its own genome. So that you don't have a fish turns into a chimpanzee turns into a human being. They have a different genome to begin with, a totally different genetic makeup. And this totally different genetic makeup of this 800, well, say, for the human being, it's equivalent to 880,000 pages of information. If you came across that in the Library of Science library in, say, Washington, D.C., you'd wonder, who wrote all these books? Who put this information there? There has to be an intelligent designer. Common sense with theology and science meets, so that the explanation for the incredible beginnings of your very life, who wrote the book of life? Who wrote your book of life that is absolutely unique and distinct from everyone else's book? That we know now. So what we know now is that there is the passing on from one generation to the next of the genome of the genes, but it doesn't come from chaos to order, and that a human being's genome is totally different from every other species that is beneath us who are lacking in the genes. Like a chimpanzee, they lack, well, 30,000 genes that we have. The information times 30,000 pages of information. That's a rather substantial lack, right? And you're not going to exactly change that. So a human being, every human being, is the result of the divine, infinite designer bringing that person into existence from the beginning. So you're not a high form of animal life. You are a human being, which is absolutely distinct and not evolving. Very important to understand that. Now, the other dimension I'd stress is this, is that we use the word reproduction. Woman has reproductive rights. And I'd stress to you, humans cannot reproduce. It's impossible. Animals reproduce, but humans do not. And the reason is rather simple. Because you, as a human being, you have a spiritual soul. And because you have a spiritual soul, it means from the first moment of your existence, it required not only mom and dad, it required Almighty God to bring you into existence. So when you came into existence, the whole world at that moment was altered and made different and changed, and it is so forever. It'll never be the same again. Because your immortal soul is spiritual, and it is forever. Not just this lifetime, forever. And you are made in the image of God. And so we don't use the word, the purpose of marriage is to reproduce. We use the word in marriage, the purpose of marriage is unitive and procreative. The reality is this, you see, Almighty God, when He made the world from nothing, we call creation, creatio ex nihilo, to create something from nothing. But when He brings about a human being, mom and dad work with him. They work with him. And they bring about, and at that moment, He creates the spiritual soul. And you now are body and soul. You are, your mom and dad work with God. We use that special word of procreation. Procreation. To bring home the idea, mom and dad and God. So you are not only unique in your genetic makeup forever, you are forever, and you came into existence because Almighty God made you. You're not an accident. There are no accidents that are human beings. Every human being is precious and created individually by Almighty God. And it's an irrepeatable gift of God. Every life, and is to be treated with respect and dignity, no matter what the condition. We like to use the word, oh, the person is so sick, they're in a vegetative state. No, my friends. You are not a vegetable, and you never will be. But we reduce. We use language, you see. We use language to dehumanize, depersonalize, and to destroy. So you can easily practice euthanasia by saying, well, it's just a vegetable. Now, humans do not become vegetables. You always remain a human being. Sick, dependent, but a human being. Now, what we tend to do now, I stress this because this is an incredible moment in which the science, the world of science, makes this incredible breakthrough to show that the beginning of life is this conception. And, you know, I find it interesting, in 1858, 1 year before Darwin's Origins of Species came out in 1859, there was a young girl, Bernadette Spirou, in Lourdes, in France. And Our Blessed Lady appeared to her. And when she was asked, who should she say you are, what should she tell the bishop, Mary said to tell the bishop, I am the Immaculate Conception. You take that word, what does it mean, Immaculate Conception? But the reality is this, that your life began not at birth, not at your birthday. Your life began at your conception. And if you do not respect life from conception, there'll never be a birthday. If you dehumanize life at any point along the line, there'll never be a birthday. And almost Almighty God was preparing us for the 21st century when Our Blessed Lady came and told Bernadette Subaru in 1858 that I am the Immaculata, that conception that is not affected by original sin, that new genome, that is absolutely from the beginning Immaculata. See? And that is who I am. That is who you are. There's no use speaking about right. You are involved in protecting the right to life of an individual if you are not going to respect that person's right to life and protect it from the moment of their conception. It's meaningless. But we now, as you know, the attack on life, the greater attack on life today is not after birth. It's not even on the children in the womb. It's in the laboratories. The great attack on life today is at conception. Now, how can that be when we know now more about this incredible moment of conception than we ever did in the history of the world? We know we're also in the presence of God when we reflect on this, how humbled we are, because what do we know about these genes and how they work and how they affect the proteins and so forth? Well, very little. In this sense, that if you were to take a book that had the a dictionary, as it were, of the genes of the human being, and you listed them, and you had 60,000 words listed there, and you opened up the book, what would you find? For the most part, after each word, nothing. No definition, no meaning, because we don't know how it works. It may take us another century, a millennium, to be able to know how it works. It's amazing how great God is. But how do we use it now? We use it in a negative fashion. We can run a test and find out if you are genetically defective, if you are missing some of these 60,000 genes. And then what can we do? Well, we can then clean up and cleanse the human race by eliminating those who are genetically defective from the first moment of their existence. So, for example, in the in vitro fertilization clinics today, no life is implanted in the womb of a mother unless that new life passes the test. If it flunks the test, no life. What do I mean? There is a pre-implantation genetic analysis test today given to every single human life that's grown in the petri dishes in the various research labs across the world. And if you find, they take this genetic analysis test and they find you are genetically deficient, you're destroyed. On the basis of whom? Well, the elite committee. Does mom know what's going on? Does dad know? They haven't got a clue. They haven't got a clue. They just don't. It's not working. It's not good. See, what we're doing now is instead of having amniocentesis test given to a pregnant mother the 12th and 13th week to find out she has birth defects, for what purpose? To destroy the child. That's what we did. That's what we do. We have the poor on public hospitals being given amniocentesis tests for what purpose? You're going to cure them if they find out there's a problem? No, we're going to recommend abortion. Get rid of the kid. We don't need the problems. You don't need it either. How could you have a kid suffer? So what we do now is we're going back to the very beginning. We're going back to the very beginning, the first moment of conception, and we're going to be able to tell if we can cleanse the human race from the very beginnings now. Tremendous powers we have. And we will decide who is genetically defective and who is not. And then we will simply eliminate them. But you see, you said to me that this is an incredible moment in the history of mankind in the year 2000 when you broke the DNA genetic code of life. And you said, this is an incredible thing. Do you realize what is here? The whole genome, the whole history, the whole life of this person. It's like, for example, if you went to a concert and you listened to it and you loved it and someone put it on a disc. And you brought it home, and a person never heard a disc or a record before. And you said, listen. And all of a sudden, they began to hear the concert, the song. And what? Oh, I can't believe this. Listen, the best is yet to come. Let the song be sung. Let the concert be complete. Why do you hear this? My friends, everyone is a unique song that's put there by God in your genetic code. And we have no right to not let that song be sung. We have no right to not let each one to grow. It's going to be beautiful. It's going to give praise to God for time and forever. It's demonic what we're doing. We're playing God. It's wrong. So what happens is this. You then take this new life, and you say, well, it's genetically deficient. Now notice how to do this, you need a couple of things. You have to have Darwin's theory of the origin of species really in play here to say, well, it's just a low form of animal life that eventually evolved into maybe a human being, but right now it's a nothing. And the reality is that modern molecular biology today says that's nonsense. From the very beginning, the genome is totally human, and it will never be anything but human. And it will continue, let it be, and it'll be walking alongside of you. You have no right to interfere with God's plan. Plus, the other dimension is this, these people do not believe in God. They do not believe in spirit. And so they do see human life in the labs as practically just a high form of animal life, like rats running around. Experiment on them. They don't see an immortal soul. They don't understand God, the spirit. But you still have a problem. It is life. So how do they do this? Now it's very interesting. In the whole area of contraceptives, which you can see a contraceptive does what? It stops the hybrid genome from meeting and fusing and shuts out God. Think about it, you know? In other words, when a person gets married, what do? They say, I'm going to give my... So today it's insane. Everything's crazy. What do? People get together today, the first thing they do is they get into bed and they have sex relations. And then they get out of the bed and they say, who are you? let's get to know each other. Now the reality is this. The natural, normal way would be you build a friendship. You become one in mind and interest, and one in heart, one in soul. And eventually, if you have a physical attraction to each other, you say, well, let's live our life together. And the consequences of this act clearly is, out of this act of love with God, new life will come. We'll care for it. We'll nurture it together. And the final consummation of your relationship, of your love, is the sexual act by which one person is saying to another person, I love you and I'm giving myself to you so completely that I'm giving even the most intimate part of my being, my fertility, my sexual ability to work with God and bring new life into the world. Okay? As finally brought to completion in the marvelous setting of marriage. That God brings a man and a woman and God together, and out of that act of love comes new life. And so the purpose of marriage is unitive, where the two ultimately become one in heart, one in mind, and one in body, one in soul. And it becomes procreative, where out of this act of love comes new life. You see, a contraceptive act destroys both aspects of marriage. First of all, it destroys unity. Boy. Because the contract of marriage is where you are saying to the other, I like you, we're friends, we're good, we're growing in mind and heart and soul together, and now I give to you in this special covenant relationship, I give you the most intimate part of my being, the gift of my fertility. And God willing, together with God, new life will come. And then the contraceptive act does what? It removes the gift of the fertility. It destroys the contract. It's against the unitive. It's obviously, it's against the procreative. It shuts out God. It shuts out life. Right? And it shuts out love. And once you separate the act of sexuality and love from life deliberately, you are now in trouble. Because human life, when it is separated from human and divine love, you can do anything you want to it. Once you depersonalize, once you separate human and divine love from human life, that no one bonds with it, that no one identifies with it, well, then you can do whatever the hell you want with it. No one cares. No one identifies with it. That's what's happening in the laboratories, the fertility clinics, all over the world. Human life is being grown. And we make it like a nothing. It's not a nothing. That's how we all started. That first zygote. We didn't start with our birthday. We started, I am the Immaculata Concepcion. We started with conception. Now we're taking it out of context. We're removing it from human love. And we even forget that there is a God involved here. And we the scientists, we the clever people, see, we the shallow people, we're growing human life, and we're going to do better than God. We're going to correct God's mistakes. We're going to correct the mistakes that God makes in bringing human life into existence. We will eliminate them. We'll give pre-implantation genetic analysis tests, and we'll grow the life in the petri dish. And then this new life will take and will implant. But you know the difficulty. The difficulty is simply this, that the implantation normally doesn't take. So when the woman goes in to fertility clinic, they say to her, well, because it normally doesn't take and it's expensive, it can be painful, etc., 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 we should fertilize maybe a dozen, 12, now they do as many as possible. Why? Because they use those fertilized lives for research. It's a great source of stem cell research, embryo stem cell research, a great cell source for everything. Hmm? And so what they do, they take all of this new life and they freeze it. You know what we're talking about? We're talking about you frozen on a shelf somewhere. You could identify with that. Okay? And no one caring. No one caring. Right? Frozen on a shelf somewhere. Because you've taken it out of the context that God intended. What is the context God intended? He intends human life to come in, creation itself to come into existence out of an act of love. The only explanation. Creation is the expression of God's love. You sitting here before me, standing here before me, shout out to me the love of God. Because that's the only reason why you exist, because God loves you. He brought you into existence. And the reality is this, that the act of creation itself of a human being, God intended to be in the context where a man loves a woman, and a woman loves a man, and they give themselves totally to each other,
and unconditionally they accept life from this act of love. When you are born into a true family, you don't have to pass a test to continue to exist. When you are born in a laboratory, you have to pass a test to continue to exist. Because life in the laboratory is without love. Human love. And actually, they just disregard divine love, the act of God that's there. When you, every child should be welcome, not wanted. That word wanted is out of hell. Every child should be unconditionally accepted. That's how God accepts you. That's how he accepts every person. God's love is everlasting, unconditional. We turn away from God. God never turns away from us. He died for us. He loves us with an everlasting love. And when we turn back to God, guess what? He never turned from us. He couldn't turn from us. He loves us with an everlasting love. That has to be the type of love of mom and dad for their children. And through that, the children would experience what God is really like. But when children are born in a laboratory where no one even cares, when they are ordered, designed as babies, like you design the genes, I want a child with blue eyes, I want a child with this, I want a... Who do you think you are? It's a gift. It's a gift from God. You don't throw away God's gift. Oh, try again. And of course, this is what happens, you see. They put they don't put one fertilized ovum into a mother and plant it. They put in four at a time. But sometimes all four take. I don't even know what it's one. So they have in the medical books a chapter called selective reduction. And so the 13th week, they go in at the 13th week and they put a needle into the heart of the three of the four children because you only ordered one. And suppose the one does take, how about the 13 children frozen on the shelves? That's a good question, isn't it? Suppose you go and you get a divorce. How about the children? Who gets the children? Do you have right to destroy them? Now today what they say is take as many frozen fertilized ovums as you can, see, and freeze them because they are the tremendous source of embryo stem cell research. They're the tremendous source of research in the laboratories, in the universities, in the colleges. We almost have to have this to make progress now. And it's interesting, the whole thing of cloning in New Jersey. Therapeutic cloning, you passed it. It's being subsidized in New Jersey. It's hellish. What is it? Well, people say, well, we're all against adult cloning, but not therapeutic cloning. I have news to you. Before God, adult cloning is more acceptable than therapeutic cloning. See, I said to you, when you have a man and a woman have relations in God's design, okay, the ovum and the sperm fuse and the zygote, and you have now 23 chromosomes, 23, 46 chromosomes, absolutely unique from all the world. It's you. What do you do when you have cloning? When cloning, you take this. You take an ovum from the woman and you remove the 23 chromosomes from the nucleus. And then you take from the donor a cell with the 46 chromosomes. And you put the 46 chromosomes into the ovum, the nucleus where you remove the 23. And now you grow this new life that has the same genetic makeup as the donor. So that if you were to grow, it would be a clone of you. Now, if you were to allow the person to grow a clone, I don't know what the relationship is, but at least they're growing alongside of you. No, we couldn't do that. We couldn't do that. What are we going to do? What we're going to do is this. We're going to grow a clone of me. I'm going to kill it. Well, why are you going to kill it? Well, you see, if you have stem cell research and you're trying to get parts from an embryo stem cell, and you grow the parts, even there may be difficulties. The difficulty is your body has an immune system. Very important. If the immune system is to ward off other bacteria and diseases that could hurt you, if you don't have an immune system, you could die from a cold. So, for example, people with AIDS, most of them do not die from AIDS.
they die from a cold because the immune system is broken down, and they cannot withstand the smallest cold, and it turns into pneumonia, and they die. When you have an organ transplanted to you from another body, it's a foreign body. Your immune system recognizes it and rejects it. But suppose we had a transplant of an organ to you that was the same genetic makeup as you, your body would accept it. So the purpose of cloning is to grow a part that from a human being that is exactly the same as you, so that you can take the part and your body will accept it. Now, how are we going to have people accept this incredible growing of my child to kill the child so I may live an extra month? Well, let's change the wording. See, always social engineering is preceded by verbal engineering. Let's change the wording. Let's use the word therapeutic. Therapeutic sounds great. Therapeutic is like healthy, you know? So we'll call it therapeutic cloning. See, therapeutic cloning is, now, Wall Street gets in on it. They said, this is good because if you can grow the parts, the body's going to take them, and you probably can sell them. We probably can make a lot of money off this. And, of course, the therapeutic cloning is to sell the people. You sell the people that they will accept this because it's therapeutic. It's healthy. Right? We're all against adult cloning, which is just to let the kid grow. Which, of course, is not as evil as to let the kid grow, to kill the kid, to take the parts so you can live an extra year. That's therapeutic cloning. So you've got to get past the language. You've got to understand what's going on. And it's not a nothing. So you started with, we're not talking about it's a not a human life. It's a nothing. It is a human being. You all started at conception. We know more about it today than ever before. And we're actually doing the most barbaric things today in the history of mankind. And we're doing it under the highest auspices. And we're doing it with what's incredible, making it legal, subsidizing it, making it constitutional, making it a wonderful thing. As this culture of death, you think, my friends, the culture of death is just dealing with trying to save an unborn child. You're out of your minds. This culture of death is from the beginning of life to the end of life, you're losing your freedom. Others are determining who will be born and when you will die. And it's an elite few that is doing it. And most people don't have a clue what they're talking about. I find it interesting. You see, you say, how could you do this experimentation and destruction on this new life after you say to me, it's an incredible moment of conception that we broke the code, we broke the genetic code of life in the year 2000. How could you destroy this? Well, then what we have to do is we have to change some definitions for you. Namely, when does pregnancy begin? We all thought pregnancy begins when you conceive. We all know that life starts at conception. Has to be. Oh, no. No, no. We have changed the definition, starting about 1969, 1970. And pregnancy begins only when this new life that is conceived is implanted. And only when it's implanted, then do we talk about the beginning of a pregnancy. And before that, we treat it like it's a nothing, even though we want the whole world to applaud in the year 2000, when we took the nothing and said, here is 880,000 pages of information about the whole story of your life. That's a nothing, when we want to destroy it. When we want you to fund it, we tell you it's everything. Why did they do that in the beginning? You see, it's interesting, in the whole area of contraceptives, they used the people in Puerto Rico as the women to make all the experimentations on the so-called pill in 1950s. And they used very high dosage to cause incredible side effects on women in Puerto Rico. By 19, you know, you could not buy a contraceptive in the United States before 1965. It was against the law. In 1965, Griswold versus Connecticut, the Supreme Court said a married couple in the privacy of their home could use a contraceptive. In 1972, they had another
the head versus ISIS diet, and they said that a single person could use a contraceptive. We said, well, no, it's mostly married people. No, now a single person. By 1978 or 79, they said a minor could use it. By 1987, they said, well, you could, in a public school, give contraceptives to a minor without parental permission or notification. You think this is going on like a whole lot? It's only within a short period of time this whole thing has come. Now, what happened was this. When they were trying to sell the contraceptive, by 1960, they had reached the point where they said, we have enough reliability of suppressing ovulation that we could market it, but we can't market it because it's against the double side effects that the women in Puerto Rico had experienced in the 50s. And there was hearings held in Washington, D.C., and the pharmaceutical companies were being sued for millions of dollars, but not telling the women all these incredible side effects that this was causing upon their body. And they were being sued. And so they went back to the board, and they went back to the researchers, and they changed the makeup of the pill. Namely, instead of the pill suppressing ovulation 96% of the time, it only suppresses ovulation 50% of the time. But if conception takes place, what does it do? The other 50% of the time, it removes the lining of the uterus, the rich blood cells. And removes the lining of the uterus, the rich blood cells, the new life, when it comes down, it cannot implant. So if the new life comes down and the rich blood cells, you see, in the human body, in a woman's body, it's a miracle, an absolute miracle. The woman's body, when she is in the process about to ovulate, the uterus begins to build up these rich blood cells that will allow the new life is conceived to implant. If it doesn't, is there no conception, then there is the shedding of the rich blood cells, the menstrual period for the woman. But if you confuse nature with hormones and have it shed the rich blood cells, when it should be preparing it, when the new life comes, it can implant, it'll be either die of starvation or it'll be disintegrated. But to do that, we have to change the definition of what a contraceptive is. We have to change the definition of pregnancy. Because it's not stopping conception. Conception will take place 50% of the time. But when it comes down, it will not be able to implant. So let's change the definition and say, well, pregnancy starts with implantation. If it doesn't implant, then it is not a, then it doesn't stop conception. So they call it a contraceptive, even though it's stopping life after conception. Like the morning after pill. The morning after pill is a morning after contraceptive. Pure nonsense. The morning after pill is a pill that is used to destroy the new life from being able, if it, to implant on the side of the wall of the uterus. It's an abortifacient. We now use the RU486. If it implants in the state of embryo now, the RU486 can kill that new life with chemicals up to 12, 13 weeks into gestation. The morning after pill destroys it after it is conceived. The contraceptive is supposed to do it before. Practically 80% of the contraceptives today are abortifacient also in their mechanism, because if pure contraceptives so restrain the natural nature of the woman, it causes incredible side effects and there's tremendous lawsuits with pharmaceuticals, and they don't need that, so they change it and then change the language, change everything, and get on with it. This also allows us in the laboratories, in the fertility clinics, to grow life and you not to be bothered much about it, because it's not really human life. It's just conception conceived in the petri dishes, and we're experimenting on it, and we're doing this, and it really doesn't become a person or a human being or human life until we say so. And we don't say so until we finish all the experimentation. Then it happens. So they say, it doesn't become human until the 14th day, the 18th day, whatever you want. Whatever it takes us to finish our work, then we'll buy, then you can buy the rest. So the reality is that the life itself, the church knows this. So it was in 1968 that Humani Vitae, the church, knew marriage itself was under attack. She knew that the process of procreation was under attack. She reaffirmed marriage itself.
and its worth and its dignity. She reaffirmed the process by which God intended human life to come into existence, an act of a man and a woman in love. And she made the clear distinction that that the pill, that's really the thing that was being evaluated at the time, that the pill also was a contraceptive because of the intent. Whereas if you took medicine and to cure cancer, and it made you infertile, so when you had relations, you couldn't conceive, the church says, fine, that's not your intention, side effect, no problem. But when you take something precisely in order not to conceive, because you don't want children, church says, no, there's no difference here. That's contraceptive, inattention, inaction, in every other way. Plus, it was only the beginning. The church was led by the Holy Spirit. It was only the beginning, because once we separated the act of sex and love of life, it was only a matter of time between science and technology in the 21st century would separate life from the act of love and sex. And then we really could get on with it. In laboratory reproduction of human life, treating humans like animals, growing life, experimenting on life, creating hybrids, really getting on with it. And so the church in 1987 came out with another document called Donum Vitae. First was Humani Vitae. Humani Vitae was the church restating that the process of procreation as God intended should be respected, and marriage itself is a relation between a man and a woman cooperating with God, and that's it. Nothing else is marriage. You see, marriage itself, as you know, is under attack today. But it really is not. I had no Protestant minister to me, Father. He said, the same-sex marriage is not really a sign that marriage is under attack. It's more a sign to say that marriage is dead. Because we have not stood up for it all the way along the line. It's the final culmination of this is what we now have. The reality is, the church then, in Humani Vitae, defined again the purpose of marriage, the beauty of God's design, God's creation. Donum Vitae, 1987, was a document by the church that was dealing now with what? By 1987, life was now under attack, not trying to stop conception, but after conception was conceived, from the time of birth. All the fertility clinics, all the nonsense that goes on today, Donum Vitae was directly giving guidance to the rightness and wrongness of this. Namely, it was saying life must be respected from conception unto birth. And you cannot play God. If you do, you do it at your own risk. And then by 1995, Evangelii Vitae, the Gospel of Life. Pope John Paul II came out with the Gospel of Life, my friends, and that was the most, if you want, collegial document in the history of the church. Because in 1990 or 91, all the cardinals of the church were at Rome, and they were supposed to come and do their homework beforehand. And what they were supposed to do was to see what is the condition of life in their country and bring forth propositios, statements, to proclaim what it is. So each cardinal was getting up one after the other, reading what the condition of life was in his country. And after about the fourth or the fifth cardinal gave his statement, they all stopped and looked at each other. They said, what is this, mirror reporting? It's all the same. How could this be? There is an international conspiracy against life, and against marriage, and against God, and all of these things we hold as sacred. And they began to realize that, and they said to the Holy Father, my God, you must take all these findings, put them together, and produce an encyclical, and speak to the world. See, Humani Vitae, why do people get upset with Humani Vitae? Because the Holy Father addressed that to the world. He said it's against nature. In other words, contraceptives are not wrong because you are a Catholic. It's wrong because you're a human being. And as a result of that, the reality is that even if you were not a Catholic, the Holy Father is saying, you must not go against nature. It's against the natural law. That's why they're always so upset with the church's teaching on Humani Vitae and the contraceptives, because we are saying to the world, you're not respecting God's design and God's plan. The same thing with Donum Vitae, the gift of life. That has nothing to do with being a Catholic. That has everything to do with being a human being.
to the church is not at the present time. Things are so bad. We don't spend our time trying to define how many persons in God, the sacraments. The error is today about mankind, human life. That's where we're at. And so it was in Evangelium Vitae, the Gospel of Life. The Holy Father, after he heard this from the cardinals, he sent a letter to every bishop in the world. He said, I want you to send back to me what is the condition of life in your diocese. And they did. And then he put together all of this incredible findings of all the bishops, all the cardinals of all the world. And he prayed over it. And he put together during the next 4 or 5 years, and he came out with a document called the Gospel of Life. It is the charter, the Magna Charta of the pro-life movement. It's a summary of this whole, and in there he capsulized and began what we call today the wording of a culture of death and a culture of life. And he said, where does this culture of death come from? Where did it start? He said, it started in the Garden of Eden. God made us with life, and it was a good life. And then the devil came and inspired our first parents to what? You could be as God. What's God? There's no limitations. Do whatever you want. You won't die. You'll know as much as God. Go ahead. You can do a better job in growing life than God can. And so they did. Death came into the world. And soon their own sons were killing each other. Cain was killing Abel. And we've been killing each other since. And death came into the world. And in the Garden of Eden, the Holy Father says to you, also the culture of life was promised. Once again, God said, I will send a woman. And her son will crush the head of the serpent. And he will establish again the culture of life. And so the reality is this, my friends. There is no other answer to establishing a culture of life except the person, Jesus Christ, and the woman. The intercession of the Mother of God. And it is this living, risen Christ that establishes for us already the reason for our hope that we already have won the victory of life. And this risen Christ, he is very much alive today. And he wants to continue to do the work that he did on earth. But he cannot do that unless and through his mystical body, the church. Just as when he first came into the world, he asked Mary for permission, may I live within you? She said, yes. And the word took flesh and she gave Christ to the world. So today, again, once again, God asked you for permission. May I live within you, the risen Christ. It's called communion, the Eucharist. And then you live the Mass. You go out. And it's not you. It is Jesus Christ, the risen Christ, in you, in which you bring his truth, his life, his plan to the world today, and you suffer with Christ. You make up what is yet lacking in the sufferings of Christ in your body, the church. And you live the Passover. You live the Mass. And it is through that, worked through and in Jesus Christ, that the culture of life can be once again established. And it's only in Christ that you have this integral vision of who humans are. You come from God, you're going back to God. You have been redeemed by the blood of Christ. You are incorporated into the body of Christ. You are children of God with an absolutely unique end and dignity that must be respected by everyone that meets you. And you must see that what you do to others, you do it to Christ. And that when you do it to others, they must see in you Christ. So to be holy and to be Christ-like is the most important part of this mission of life to the world. The world desperately needs Jesus Christ and the Gospel of Life. And the world will only know it and experience it through you. The reality is, it was only when the people saw at Calvary Jesus shedding his blood, saying, Father, forgive them, and speaking the truth, and dying for the truth, that the conversions began. The centurion, the thief, and all had started. We will not convert the world without witnesses. We need martyrs to the truth, who will live the truth, are people of the truth, people of life, who will bring God's life. Not our weakness, not our plans, not our limitations. You bring the plan, the life, the power, the strength of God to the world. And they will accept it. They are in darkness and they need the light. They are without love and they need the love of God.
They're in despair with sin. They need the hope that comes from the forgiveness of Jesus. They need you. Do not keep them waiting. God bless you.